Taita had driven the chariot all the way from the ruined city of Galala with only 4 halts. They had made the run in half a day, less than it had taken Naja and Tomoza to cover the same route, and at less cost to the condition of the animals. The troopers in the 9 vehicles that followed him were in awe of the Magus's reputation. They knew him as the father of the corps of cavalry, for he had been the first Egyptian ever to build a chariot, and to harness a team to it. His celebrated ride from Thebes to Elephantine to carry the news of the victory of Pharaoh Tomoza over the Hyksos was the stuff of legend. Now, as they followed his chariot through the dunes, they knew that the legend was well-founded. The old man's stamina was amazing, and his concentration never wavered. His gentle but firm hands on the reins never tired, as hour after hour he coaxed the horses into giving their best. He had impressed every man in the squadron, not least the one riding beside him in the cockpit. Gil was Naja's lance-bearer. He had a rugged, sun-darkened face and was lightly built, which was desirable for a charioteer, but he possessed also a wiry strength and cheerful disposition. He had to have been one of the best to be selected to ride in the commander's chariot. With the moon waxing and the weather at its hottest, they had driven through the cool of the night. Now, in the dawn, they halted to rest. When they'd watered the horses, Gil came to where Taita sat on a boulder overlooking the wadi of Jebel Wadun and handed him a ceramic water jug. Taita took a long swig from the spout, swallowed the bitter water that they'd carried with them from Galala, with no sign of repugnance. It was the first drink he'd taken since their last stop at midnight. "The old devil rouser's as tough as a Bedouin raider," Gil thought with admiration, and squatted at a respectful distance to await any order that Taita might issue. "Where is the place at which Pharaoh was struck down?" Taita asked at last. Gil shaded his eyes against the glare of the rising sun and pointed down the wadi to where the dry riverbed debouched onto the plains. "Down there, my lord, near that distant line of hills." The first time Taita had questioned Gil had been before the council when the lance-bearer had given evidence on the circumstances of Pharaoh's death. The council had called every person who might have any knowledge of it to testify at the inquiry. Taita remembered that Gil's evidence had been coherent and credible. He had not been overawed by the pomp of the council and its illustrious members, but had spoken out like the honest, simple soldier he was. When it was shown to him, he'd recognized the Hyksosian arrow as the one that had struck down Pharaoh Tomoza. The shaft had been snapped in two. Lord Naja had broken it off to ease the pain of the wound. That had been the first occasion of their meeting. They'd spoken briefly once or twice since leaving Thebes. But until now, there had not been the opportunity for any long conversation. "Are any other men here who were with you on that day?" Taita asked now. "Only Samos. He was waiting with the chariots in the wadi when we were attacked," Gil replied. "I want you to point out the exact place to me, and I want you to take me over the battleground," Taita told him. Gil shrugged. "Was no battle, just a skirmish. There'll be precious little to see. 'Tis a barren place. However, it shall be as the mighty Magus commands." The troop mounted and descended the steep side of the wadi in single file. There had been no rain here in 100 years, and even the desert wind had not wiped away the tracks of Pharaoh's chariots, which were still deeply scored and plain to read. When they reached the floor of the wadi, Taita continued to follow them, his own wheels riding in the deep grooves that they had left. They were alert for a Hyksos ambush, and watched both banks of the wadi, But although the raw rock danced in the heat image, there was no sign of an enemy. "There's the watchtower," Gil pointed ahead, and Taita saw its gnarled silhouette leaning drunkenly against the unblemished pale blue of the sky. They swept round another bend in the riverbed, and even from 200 paces Taita could make out the area of confused wheel tracks where the chariots of Pharaoh's squadron had halted and circled, and where many men had dismounted and remounted in the soft sand of the wadi bottom. Taita signalled his small force to slow down, and they moved forward at a walk. "This is where Pharaoh dismounted, and they went forward with Lord Narja to scout the camp of Apepe." Gil pointed over the side of the dashboard. Taita halted the chariot and signalled to the others to do the same. "Wait for me here," he ordered the sergeant of the following vehicle, then turned to Gil. "Come with me. Show me the battleground." Gil led the way up the rude pathway. At first he went slowly, in deference to the old man, but soon realized that Taita was matching him step for step and speeded up. The gradient increased, and the surface became more uneven as they went on. Even Gil was breathing hard when at last they reached the tumble of large boulders halfway up the hill that almost blocked the pathway. "This is as far as I went," Gil explained. "So where did Pharaoh fall?" Taita looked round him at the steep but open hyllside. Where were the Hyksosian troops hidden? From where was the fatal arrow fired? "I cannot tell you, Lord." Gil shook his head. "I and the rest of the men were ordered to wait here, while Lord Narja went forward beyond that outcrop of boulders." "Where was Pharaoh? Did he go forward with Narja?"
"No, not at first. The king waited with us. Lord Narja heard something up ahead, went to scout, and disappeared from our view."
"I don't understand. At what point were you attacked?"
"We waited here." I could see that Pharaoh was becoming impatient. "After a while, Lord Narja whistled from beyond the rocks. Pharaoh sprang up. 'Come on, lads,' he told us, and went up the path."
"Were you close behind him?"
"No, I was near the rear of the file."
"Well, did you see what happened next?"
"Pharaoh disappeared behind the boulders. Then there was shouting and the sound of fighting. I heard Hyksos voices and arrows and spears striking the rocks. I ran forward, but the path was crowded with our men who were trying to get round the boulders here to reach the fight." Gil ran forward to show him how the path narrowed and wove round the tallest boulder. "This was as far as I got. Then Lord Narja was shouting that Pharaoh had been struck down. The men ahead of me were milling round, and suddenly they dragged the king down to where I was standing. I think he was dead even then."
"How close were the Hyksos? How many were there?
Were they cavalry or infantry? Did you recognize their regiments?" Taita demanded. All the Hyksos wore distinctive regalia, which the Egyptian troops had come to know well.
"Oh, they were very close," Gil told him. "And there were a lot of them, at least a squadron."
"What regiment?" Taita insisted. "Did you pick out their plumes?" For the first time, Gil looked uncertain and a little shamefaced. "My lord, I did not actually set eyes on the enemy. You see, they were behind the rocks up there."
"Then how do you know their strength and numbers?"
Taita frowned at him.
"Lord Narja was shouting—"
Gil broke off and dropped his eyes.
"Did any of the others, apart from Narja, see the enemy?"
"I do not know, Honourable Magus.
You see, Lord Narja ordered us back down the pathway to the chariot. You could see that the king was mortally wounded, probably already dead. We'd all lost heart."
"You must have discussed it later with your companions. Did any of them tell you he had engaged an enemy? That he'd hit one of the Hyksos with arrow or lance? Gil shook his head doubtfully. Don't remember. No, I don't think so. Apart from the king, were any others wounded? None. Why did you not tell this to the council? Why did you not tell them that you'd not seen an enemy? Taita was angry now. Lord Naja told us to answer the question simply and not to waste the council's time with idle boasting and long tales of our part in the fighting. Gil hunched his shoulders with embarrassment. I suppose none of us wanted to admit that we ran without a fight. Do not feel ashamed, Gil. You carried out your orders, Taita told him in a kinder tone. Now, climb up the rocks there and keep your eyes open. We're still in Hyksosian territory. I shall not be long. Taita went forward slowly and stepped round the boulder that blocked the path. He paused and surveyed the ground ahead. From this angle, he could just make out the top of the ruined watchtower. The path went up towards it in a series of doglegs, then it disappeared over the crest of a slope which was fairly open, with little cover for a Hyksosian ambush, just a few clumps of rock and scattered sun-blasted thorn trees. Then he remembered that it had happened at night. But something disturbed him. Taita felt a vague sense of evil, as though he were being watched by a powerful malignant force. This feeling grew so strong that he stood motionless in the sunlight and closed his eyes. He opened his mind and his soul, becoming a dry sponge to soak up any influence from the air around him. Almost at once, the feeling grew stronger still. There were terrible things here. But the focus of evil emanated from somewhere not far ahead of him. He opened his eyes and walked slowly towards it. There was nothing to be seen other than heat-blasted rock and thorn. But how could he even smell evil in the hot air? A faint but rank odour like the breath of a carrion-eating wild beast. He stopped and sniffed like a hunting dog. And immediately the air smelt dusty and dry, but clean. This proved to him that the elusive stench was something outside natural law. He was catching the faint echo of an evil that had been perpetrated in this place, but when he tried to pinpoint it, it disappeared. He took another pace forward, then another, and once more the nauseating stench wafted around him. Another pace, and now the smell was accompanied by a feeling of great sorrow, as though he had lost something of inestimable value, something that could never be replaced. He had to force himself to take the next step up the rocky pathway, and at that instant something struck him with a force that drove the air from his lungs. He cried out in agony and dropped to his knees, clutching his chest, unable to breathe. It was extreme pain, the pain of death, and he struggled with it as though with a serpent that had wound its coils around him. He managed to throw himself back down the path, and immediately the pain fell away. Gil had heard him cry out and came bounding up the path. He seized Taita and helped him to his feet. "What is it? What ails you, my lord?" Taita thrust him away. "Go! Leave me! You are in danger here. This is a thing not of men, but of gods and demons. Go! Wait for me at the bottom of the hill." Gil hesitated, but then he saw the look in those glittering eyes and recoiled as if from a ghost. "Go!" Taita said in a voice Gil never wanted to hear again, and he fled. For a long time after he'd gone, Taita struggled to bring his body and mind back under his own control to enable him to counter the forces arrayed against him. He reached into the pouch on his belt and brought out the periapt of Lostris. He held it in his right hand and stepped forward again. As he came to the exact spot on the pathway, the pain struck once again with even more savage intensity, like a flint-tipped arrow through his chest. And he could barely prevent himself screaming as he reeled backwards and the pain fell away as it had before. Panting, he stared down at the stony ground. At first it seemed unmarked and no different from any other point on the rugged pathway he had traversed. Then a small, ethereal shadow appeared on the earth. As he watched, it changed, became a shimmering dark scarlet pool. Slowly he sank to his knees. The heart blood of a king and a god, he whispered. Here on this very spot died Pharaoh Tahmoser. He rallied himself, and in a quiet yet firm voice spoke the invocation to Horus, so potent that only an adept of the seventh degree dared voice it. On the seventh repetition he heard the rustle of unseen wings, which stirred the desert air around him. The god is here, he whispered, and he began to pray. He prayed for his pharaoh and his friend, entreating Horus to relieve his suffering and lift his torture. Allow him to escape from this dread place, he beseeched the god. It must have been murder for his soul to have been trapped here. As he prayed, he made the signs for the exorcism of evil. Before his eyes, the pool of blood began to shrink, as though it were soaking away into the dry earth. As the last drop disappeared, Taita heard a soft, formless sound like the cry of a sleepy child. And the terrible weight of loss and sorrow that had burdened him fell from his shoulders. As he stood up, he felt a great sense of release. He stepped forward onto the spot where the pool of blood had been. Even when his sandaled feet were firmly planted upon it, he felt no pain, and his sense of well-being remained intact. Go in peace, my friend and my king, and may you live for all eternity, he said aloud, and made the sign for long life and happiness. He turned away and would have started back down the hill to where the chariots waited, but something stopped him in his tracks. He lifted his head and tested the air again. There was still a faint whiff of that evil smell, just an elusive trace of it. Warily, he turned back up the slope, past the place where Pharaoh had died, and went on. With each pace, the stench of evil grew stronger, until it caught in his throat and made his gorge rise. Once again, he realized that this was something from beyond the natural order. He went on, until after 20 measured paces, the odor began to fade. He stopped and retraced his steps. Immediately, the stench grew stronger. He quested back and forth until it was at its zenith. Then he stepped off the path and found it stronger still, almost suffocating. He was standing under the twisted branches of a thorn tree that grew next to the path. He looked up and saw that the branches were strangely shaped, as though they'd been fashioned by a human hand into a distinctive cross that stood out against the blue of the sky. He looked down, and a rock the size and shape of a horse's head caught his attention. It had been recently dislodged, then replaced in its original position. Taita lifted it out of the depression in which it sat, and saw that it covered a niche between the roots of the thorn tree. He laid it aside and peered into the niche. There was something in it, and he reached in gingerly. It was the kind of shelter that might hide a snake or scorpion. He brought out a magnificently carved and tooled object. He stared at it for a moment before he realized that it was an arrow quiver. There was no doubting its origin. for the design was in the Hyksosian heraldic style, and the image tooled into the leather cover was Sueth, the crocodile god of war revered by Hyksosian warriors. Tater twisted off the stopper cover and found that the quiver contained 5 war arrows, fletched in green and red. He drew out one of the shafts, and his heart beat fiercely as he recognized it. There could be no mistake. He had minutely examined the broken, blood-caked one that Naja had brought before the council. This was identical to the arrow that had killed Pharaoh. He held it to the light and peered closely at the signet etched into the painted shaft. It was a stylized head of a leopard holding the hieratic letter T in its jaws. This was the device he had seen on the fatal arrow. This was its identical twin. Taita turned it over and over in his hands, as though trying to draw from it the last grain of information. He held it to his nose and sniffed it. There was just the smell of wood, paint, and feathers. The foul odour that had guided him to the cache had disappeared. Why should the assassin of Pharaoh hide his quiver? After the fight, the Hyksos had been left in possession of the field. They would have had all the time they needed to recover their weapons. This was a beautiful and valuable object. No warrior would abandon it, unless he was forced to, Taita thought. For another hour he searched the hillside, but found no other item of interest, nor did he detect again the supernatural odour of putrefaction and evil. When he went down to where the chariots waited in the sand of the wadi, he carried the quiver concealed under his apron.